The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast. We are back. The Milwaukee Bucks are getting set here to kick off a season after which they went to the Eastern Conference Finals, ended disappointingly, but they are suited to do more great things here in the 2019-2020 season. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Journal Sentinel Bucks podcast. I am joined on the other line by the legendary Matt Velasquez. Matt, how are you feeling? Welcome back, buddy.
Yeah, it's good to be back in basketball season. I was getting a little aimless there during the summer. You know, it was a nice, relaxing summer for the most part. But you know, I kind of had that itch, like, okay, it's time for basketball now. The weather's getting a little bit cooler. I'd like to be inside a gym watching some hoops, and here we are.
That was the case on Sunday. The Bucks held an open scrimmage in front of about 12,000 fans at Pfizer Forum. They'll be in Chicago on Monday to take on the Bulls in the first of, I believe it's 5 preseason games. Kind of a busy schedule this year. And so we have a lot to discuss. We will be getting closer and closer to our regular schedule where we come at you once a week. And certainly that will be the case by the time we get to the end of October once the season kicks into gear. We will say lots of obvious things and hopefully not get fined $50,000 for them. But that was one of the sort of smaller storylines in this last stretch of the offseason where John Horst got dinged by the NBA for bringing up Giannis's contract situation and saying that that they would in fact be offering him a Supermax deal, as we all know they will do. But I'm going to start there before we get to some of the observations from the scrimmage and kind of what you're expecting out of the Bucks here in the early part of the season or the early part of the preseason. I did see some suggestion because Giannis has said he does not want to talk about the contract. He just doesn't want to answer questions about it. Totally understand that. Makes sense. It just comes up over and over and over. So we won't bring it up over and over and over, but we'll bring it up here. Is it a bad thing that he doesn't want to talk about it? Is it a bad thing that he's just sort of, you know, I know the way the NBA works, he kind of has to stop thinking about it for a year because he can't sign that deal until next offseason. But last we checked, it seemed like it felt pretty good that the Bucks and Giannis were headed toward an agreement of some sort after this season. Do you still feel that way, or is there any uncertainty in your mind that that Giannis might investigate other options in the next couple seasons?
Well, I think I'll start with tackling the idea of, you know, what it means that he's not going to talk about it. And I tweeted this before, and it's maybe a better, venue for me to talk about it because, you know, tweets are kind of limited. But I feel like this is pretty consistent with the way Giannis has handled these types of things. And granted, he hasn't been asked about his contract all that much. But whenever he has been asked about individual circumstances, whether they are, you know, awards or the contract or just the way that he's playing, whatever it is, he always tries to turn it back onto the team, and not necessarily in a bad way. You know, he wants to focus on the team first, the team's goals. He doesn't want it to be about him. You know, he was chasing the MVP last year, and outside of an expletive riddled statement in the middle of a game against the Wizards that we all remember, he wasn't trying to talk about the MVP. He wasn't saying that he was the MVP outside of that very obvious circumstance. But, you know, that wasn't really where his focus was. Anytime you asked him about the MVP, he said, hey, you know what? I'm focused on winning. If we win as a team, then individual awards will come. And that's true. They won as a team. Individual awards came. He was the MVP. John Horst was the executive of the year. Mike Budenholzer was the coach of the year. All those things took care of themselves. And that's the way he approached it. And so this year, I was the one who asked him, said, hey, Giannis, you know, this is going to be a big thing. There's a fascination with, you know, future contracts and who's going to go where and player movement and all this stuff. So how are you going to handle all that this year? And his response was to say that he's really not going to talk about it. He finds it disrespectful to his teammates for him to talk about his contract during the season. And his choice is going to be to avoid that conversation, even though he will be asked about it. We'll see if he's able to stick to that when it's, you know, February and he's been asked about it like every other day for, you know, 4, 5, 6 months. But you know, that's his plan, is to avoid talking about the contract because he can't sign it until, you know, June 30th when the new league year officially begins, as it did this past year, or July 1st if they don't make that move again to start free agency a little bit earlier. So he can't sign it. The Bucks can't offer him it. They can't even talk about offering him the Supermax, apparently. So saying the obvious that they have the MVP of the league and they're going to offer him the maximum amount of money they're allowed to offer him Okay, so I guess can't do that. So, you know, he doesn't want it to be a big focus of the team's year. And it's going to be, because no matter what happens, it's going to be. And I think that he's kind of in a no-win situation in the sense that if he had come out and said, hey, I love Milwaukee, I'm going to stay here forever, you know, whatever the contract they offer me next year, I'm going to take it, I want to be here forever, people would just say, yeah, well, other players have said that, and then they've left. You know, and if he'd said, you know, I'm going to leave my options open, I'm not going to commit to Milwaukee, they have to, you know, really show me some things this year, then people will say, well, you know, the Bucks are still leaders in the clubhouse, and they can definitely re-sign him still, and, you know, no big deal. So, yeah, and I think there's a lot that he and probably other players have learned from the way other players have handled this type of situation in the past. Obviously, Anthony Davis is the big one from last year, who he was on a team that was generally pretty bad over the course of the time that he was there. You know, they were a playoff team in the West a few times, but not really competitive. And so he wanted out. There are other things with the way the organization was run that just didn't work with him. And so he ended up kind of saying, you know, through his agent that he wasn't going to, you know, sign Supermax when it was offered to him, which put the Pelicans in a lame duck situation where they needed to get rid of him. They needed to trade him to get something for him. The Bucks are in a very different situation. They are expected to be one of the top two teams in the Eastern Conference, a team that is competing for the NBA title. And so there's no reason to believe that Giannis will say, oh, hey, you know what? I'm not going to try my hardest this year. You know, I need to focus on my impending potential free agency. You know, he's under contract for two more years, and, you know, he would have to dare the Bucks to trade him. And I'm sure in the current situation, when you have the best player in the league or someone who can at least be considered the best player in the league, you say, hey, you know what? We're just going to ride this to the end. We'll play chicken and we'll see what happens, because, you know, you're not going to get, you know, enough in return for Giannis to make up for his absence. At least I'd be hard pressed to believe it. I think this will continue to be a subject of conversation. I think that talking heads on TV will all claim they know exactly what he's doing. And I'm sure, you know, half of them will be wrong, because it's literally a 50-50 shot as to whether or not he signs the Supermax. It's a yes or no. I think if you are a Bucks fan, I think it's probably in your best interest to try to avoid focusing on that and just just watch the team, because if you are watching the team and you are seeing a team that is together and playing cohesively and playing well in the way that they did last year, that's really what matters. I mean, in talking to Giannis and getting to know him the past few years, all he cares about is winning. And so if he is on a team that he believes can win at the highest level, and even, you know, and maybe they can even prove that this year, if they can get to the finals or even win the finals, you know, that's going to be something that's going to resonate more than whatever other storyline someone could conjure up. And right now, you know, I think being noncommittal is the reasonable thing to do if you're Giannis. And it's not really even being noncommittal and saying, like, I don't know what I'm going to do. He's saying, I don't want to talk about it. And so I think saying I don't know what I'm going to do is different than I don't want to talk about it. And not I don't want to talk about it. It's consistent with the way he's handled individual circumstances for as long as I've been around him.
Yeah, most fans who are listening to this podcast probably know this already, but from a nuts and bolts perspective, he cannot sign this extension because he needs to hit a certain number of years in the league. And next year, I believe it's 8 years, he'll be heading into, I think, his eighth year next year. That's when he's eligible to sign the Supermax extension. There's some very specific parameters that players have to meet to be eligible for that. He hits everything except the amount of time served. So that's why they have to wait this offseason. And if I had to guess, you sort of touched on it, why this is such an easy issue to get worked up about is it is just yes or no. It isn't a situation where he can increase his value more so. His value is maxed out. I mean, he's a superstar in this league, and unless there's a catastrophic injury, knock on wood, he definitely is going to be offered this contract.
I'll stop you there. If there's a catastrophic injury, he'll still get offered the Supermax.
Still be offered the Supermax. So throw all that out the window. It is just simply, does Giannis want to do it or not? There's nothing more value. There's no, you know, you said a game of chicken. I mean, it's sort of like that, but there's there's no upping the offer here. It's, does he want to stay or does he not? And it might be just the last piece is he going to wait that extra year to see if the Bucks are truly a team that can continually compete for championships as they did this past season, right? I think I have that all right.
Yeah, and when you look at, you know, the players who have signed Supermaxes, like, you know, there haven't been too many guys who have been eligible for the full Supermax and just, like, totally turned it down. You know, like, it's such an insane amount of money that, you know, James Harden, Russell Westbrook, John Wall, like, you know, Steph Curry is going to get a Supermax. Like, everybody's, you know, if you can get that crazy amount of money, which Giannis, you know, by virtue of the salary cap going up, will get the most money that has ever been given out in a single contract, $253.75 million. You know, the most he could take from another team is significantly less than that because he can only take a four-year contract instead of a five-year contract, and they cannot offer him the same amount of money. I believe it's in like the 160s, which still tons of money. But it's a significant difference. It's about like a $90 million difference between what the Bucks can offer him and what another team can offer him. And so, you know, I know that the difference between that amount of money is may not seem like a lot, but that's a lot. I mean, yes, we're dealing with hundreds of millions, but, you know, turning down, you know, what would make, you know, Giannis the, you know, the player who owns the richest contract in NBA history, that's not something that I think anyone would do lightly.
So turning our attention then to what's going on the floor, if that is truly the area that Giannis would be most interested in terms of whether or not he stays here long term, with Malcolm Brogdon departing to Indiana in the offseason via the very complicated free agency machine that we were talking about on several podcasts, the Bucks seem to have a vacancy for that fifth starters opening, and there are a couple candidates for it. We've seen Sterling Brown start games, particularly when Malcolm Brogdon was sidelined with injury last year. They also have new addition Wesley Matthews, who I kind of assumed would be that fifth guy, along with the other stars of this team being Brook Lopez, Eric Bledsoe, Chris Middleton, and Giannis. You saw them in action at this scrimmage on Sunday. There isn't a clear-cut answer to this question yet, but if you had to speculate, which direction do you think the Bucks are leaning, or maybe this is a rotating position as the season goes on?
You know, it definitely could be a rotating position as the season goes on. I think there's no shortage of guys who could fill that role. You mentioned Sterling Brown, Wes Matthews, Dante DiVincenzo, Kyle Korver, Pat Connaughton. You can get weird and put Ersan Ilyasova in there. I mean, there's... You know, if you want to put Ersan in there, you can also put DJ Wilson in there, which, you know, it's a bummer to hear that he is, again, dealing with a hamstring injury at this point in training camp. You know, we found that out on Sunday, and Mike Budenholzer said he doesn't think that it's as bad as last year where DJ missed the start of the regular season, you know, but we'll have to see over the next few days how he's handling that. But, you know, the long and short of it is the Bucks have a ton of guys who could play that role. You know, as a fifth starter, it seemed like indications were that Wes Matthews would be that fifth guy. You know, he was the only guy who was, you know, and this may be reading way too into it, but he was the only, like, of those other guys who was, like, taking pictures with Giannis and Chris Middleton during, like, media day. You know, he was somebody who, I know at one point after practice in Madison, Chris Middleton mentioned, he was asked, like, how does Wes fit with that starting unit? And he's like, oh, I think he's fit well. It's like, well, you know, Bud's also mixed it up. So he kind of hedged a little bit. But he did say that he has been fitting well. You know, I think that, you know, as a veteran, a guy who's really good with catch and shoot threes, who can play that role, play tough defense, offer similar size to Malcolm Brogdon, you can see... the reasonable fit there. I didn't even mention George Hill just because I assume that he'll be running that second unit, though he may be closing some games like he did last year in the playoffs. You know, but then when you watch the open scrimmage on Sunday, it was out of that whole group, it was Dante DiVincenzo who really impressed the most. You know, he was kind of running point a little bit, showing some combo guard skills, knocking down open shots. I think he was 6 of 11. And then 2 for 6 on threes. And those two threes came kind of like bang, bang, one after the other. Really looked confident out there. Was cutting well, driving well. Just really doing all those kinds of things, stepping up from where he was in his rookie year and the limited time that we saw him. and making the progression that you know, if you're the Bucks, you would hope that he would make. And obviously, it's an open scrimmage. It's intra-squad. There's not a ton of defense being played in general. I mean, it's 97-95 after three quarters. That's the score of a Bucks game this year. Bud's going to be furious. Dante really, took the, made the most out of that opportunity that he had. And so it'll be interesting to see if he can do that consistently with the minutes he's given here in the preseason and really press, for that that time as maybe the fifth starter. As most of us probably remember, he started last season as a member of the rotation where he was getting regular minutes before his heel bursitis shortened his season. But I expect that with the way he's been playing, I think he'll get more chances to be part of that rotation and to prove himself yet again. I think he's progressed really well over the summer. He took his rehab seriously, spent a lot of time in Milwaukee with the coaching staff, the medical staff, all that. And, if he can be what the Bucks hope that he can be, it'll certainly, be a major step in the direction of replacing Brogdon, not just with him, but with multiple talented players who can contribute.
Yeah, pretty exciting to hear good news about DiVincenzo. Truly one of the big wild cards this season. I mean, it was easy to like what you saw from him, but we just didn't see a whole lot from him. He was not part of the picture with the injuries down the stretch. So I'm fascinated to see what he could bring to the table. Still, I think probably won't be seen as a guy that needs to be relied upon this year. Could still develop quite a bit and wind up being being that guy who takes that step forward, like you're saying. I want to know more about Robin Lopez. For a team that didn't have a chance to really add big time free agents to their team this year, they've had about as an intriguing series of offseason additions as you could have. We've already briefly discussed Wesley Matthews, and then there's Kyle Korver, Robin Lopez. I mean, these are some kind of fun stories. Lopez, of course, is the brother, Brook Lopez. Fascinating follow on Twitter, hysterical. The two of them together should be some phenomenal theater as the season goes on. I'm here for all of that. But I'm wondering, are we going to see something similar to what we saw with Brook Lopez, where Brook Lopez was basically given the keys to shoot threes far more than he had been? He sort of was getting to that point in his career, was making that transition, and then used it to great effect, of course, last season. Are we going to see the same thing from Robin Lopez? Is he going to be, I don't know, like Brooks on the court, and then when that second wave of guys comes in, it's Robin playing that same position where he's a guy who can play power forward or shoot the three? Are we going to see that same type of thing?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, maybe not 30 footers and, with the same high volume as Brook. But we saw even in the open scrimmage, and we've heard it over the course of the summer, that Robin's going to shoot threes, and they believe that he can, do more as a three-point shooter than he's shown in the past. He looked like he had a pretty good stroke, pretty good confidence from a couple different spots, especially with pick and pops near the top of the key during that open scrimmage. But at the same time, he's not going to be as prolific as Brook in that regard. I think a lot of his value will come from setting hard screens, opening guys up, battling inside to, either get rebounds or box guys out so his teammates can get rebounds. He has, a pretty dynamic or at least, traditional post presence where he has a few different moves he can go to in the post. He's been a starter for most of his career, so we'll have to see what he can do maybe against second units if he can, really just back down and have his way with second unit bigs. And then on defense, obviously, we know what Brook did last year. He contested more shots than anybody in the NBA. If you can bring somebody in who literally has the identical size, shape, makeup, of Brook, can Robin, just provide that consistency at the back of the defense, be able to move guys around, call things out, step up, contest shots, and provide a big physical body, when they need, him, when they need basically that more traditional backup center that they didn't have last year. They didn't have, someone with a similar physicality to Brook in terms of their backup centers. They had Ersan Ilyasova, who's given up a few inches, given up definitely, some weight and some size. He's not what you would expect to be a prototypical center. And then Giannis has the size, but he's not he's not built in the same way, you know, as either of the Lopez brothers. So being able to just throw Robin Lopez against, you know, particularly the likes of Joel Embiid after he's already been going against Brook, like, you know, that's an important, you know, depth situation that the Bucks now have at that position. And he should definitely, you know, fit well going forward.
I'm curious where you think Kyle Korver fits in, because obviously he's a guy who can shoot the basketball and 38 years old. We were kind of excited about the addition of Pau Gasol last year, an upper 30s guy, and obviously injuries stood in his way, but we wound up getting very little out of him. Some questions about whether Korver can keep up defensively, and you know, he's not the biggest guy in the world as NBA players go, although he's obviously he's plenty tall enough. I guess I'm curious where you think he fits in. Is he somebody that we maybe are excited about who's only going to get a spare amount of minutes, or is he going to be a very, in your estimation, somebody that we see a lot in the rotation?
I think Bud will be very willing to put him in. I think that when you have someone with that skill set, who can put up threes the way he does, and is a veteran, knows what he's doing, what he's supposed to be doing, where he's supposed to be, how he fits. I think we'll see him a pretty decent amount. He isn't necessarily going to be the same type of spark plug guy. I know sometimes that Pat Connaughton would play that role last year, where maybe he was out of the rotation, but then you'd bring him in and he could provide a little bit of a spark. I don't know if he would fit in that same vein, but I think just for the veteran leadership, you know, Bud kind of went out of his way to praise his toughness, while they were in Madison. I think that's just somebody who has an experience of winning, and not to mention his skill set that fits, that you just kind of want to have out there a decent amount. I don't think he's going to, you know, run him, you know, big minutes, but I think he's a face that we'll get accustomed to seeing for, you know, a decent amount of minutes each game.
What question do you really have? We'll just frame it that way. The Bucks did so much well last year, and they're going to be a playoff team this year. They're going to be one of the top few playoff teams in the East. They're going to contend for an NBA title. What do you think of when you look at this Bucks team right now? Really, really has to be settled in your mind before you're convinced that this team can actually make a run all the way for that, you know, for the title at the end.
Well, I think when you have questions about the Bucks, a lot of it has to do with Giannis, and it's not necessarily questioning his skill. But I wonder what happens if and when he throttles down a little bit. I know last year he said that he went really hard in the regular season because they really wanted that number one seed, and also he doesn't really know how to slow down. You know, he was at a point where, you know, he was starting to be a little achy because he was going for dunk after dunk, and anytime he saw a lane, he was trying to challenge guys and go at guys. And I think he has said that he realizes that he can't just go at people and try and dunk over people all the time. Like, he needs to be able to have a little bit of a mid-range game and maybe have some games where, you know, he doesn't need to go that hard. He needs to be able to trust his teammates and move the ball and work on different skills. So, like, what happens? What does the team look like when Giannis isn't necessarily pressing the issue and attacking all the time? You know, because if he wants to keep his body in the best possible shape, you know, maybe there are some games in, you know, December, January, February where he can say, you know what, I don't need. I have a lane. There's a guy that I think I can dunk on waiting at the end. But I'm just going to take like a 12-footer, and I'm not going to try and dunk on this guy because I want to save my back, my shoulders, my legs, my knees, all that stuff for later. So, like, what do the Bucks look like then? You know, and I'm interested too, and obviously Bud has all this depth. How exactly does he use it? There are going to be times where guys just aren't going to get play, even though they might be, you know, playing or getting heavy minutes for a different team. They might be deserving of minutes. But when you have, you know, a legitimate, you know, 13 guys who could all get in there, have all proven themselves at the NBA level, have all played in at least reasonably big games, you know, and perform well, how do you kind of parcel out those minutes while having a consistent rotation? Because that's one thing that Bud was consistent about last year, is that he normally had a 10-man rotation when he went into the game that he would stick with. And those guys knew that if they messed up, but they weren't just coming right out. He wasn't going deeper into the bench unless it was really an emergency, unless they were down by like 10, 15 points and they needed to find that spark. So how does he use that depth? How does he keep everyone happy and getting minutes and still keep up that cohesion. So, yeah, the combination of how does the team handle things when Giannis isn't just, you know, in attack mode all the time, if he actually follows through and doesn't, you know, attack, you know, night after night, and then also, you know, how does Bud use that depth?
The national publications are about to come out with their NBA previews. There's going to be a lot of predictions, team, you know, a lot of picks to win the title, and I imagine the Bucks name will be mentioned. I also think the Clippers are probably going to be front and center. They've had a fascinating offseason with the additions, of course, of Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, so they're sort of the shiny new toy on the scene right now. And the way that the offseason worked, there are a lot of teams in that mix, a lot of different contenders with some new flashy free agents. The Lakers are certainly front and center. You mentioned Anthony Davis at the beginning of this podcast here. We'll go into some of the matchups a little bit later and sort of break things down. But on the surface, if national publications don't embrace the Bucks as the clear-cut favorite to win the 2020 NBA title, would that be disappointing to you? I mean, do you feel like the Bucks should be seen as the favorite, or are there just way too many potential contenders for the Bucks to feel like they deserve that level of recognition?
You know, I wouldn't be disappointed. I wouldn't be upset. I mean, there is a deep list of teams that could contend for the championship. I mean, if I told you that the Bucks won the championship, the 76ers, the Warriors, the Clippers, the Lakers, the Nuggets, the Jazz, like the Rockets, like those are all teams. I mean, maybe there's more teams in the East. I can't really think of them. It's the Bucks and Sixers to me. But I just named 8 teams. And, you know, I didn't even mention, you know, the Portland Trailblazers went to the Eastern Conference or the Western Conference Finals last year. You know, and some people are wondering if they'll even make the playoffs. I mean, that's just how crazy things have gotten with the parity in the league, or at least the perceived parity in the league. So there's, you know, a lot of different options, for title contenders, for title favorites, all that stuff. I think that if the Bucks are overlooked, it might be because they're boring. You look at, you know, the 76ers and you think, oh, like, they have Al Horford now, and they brought back Tobias Harris, and they have Ben Simmons, and they have Joel Embiid, and what this could be a really interesting team. Like, wow, like that's crazy. And then you look at obviously the Lakers with LeBron and AD. Well, that's interesting and fun. The Clippers with Kawhi and Paul George. Oh, wow, like what could they be? That's intriguing. The Warriors now without Kevin Durant, without Klay Thompson for a lot of the season. Oh my gosh, is Steph Curry going to go off and do crazy things and return to MVP level? And is D'Angelo Russell going to be like the perfect running mate, or are they going to flip him for someone else? That's crazy. Like, I wonder what's going to happen there. Oh, Denver? Oh, they're getting snubbed because they didn't make it so far last year, and they had a sneaky quiet like offseason where they stayed consistent. Michael Porter Jr. is potentially going to be something like really good. He could fit right into that lineup. And meanwhile, the Bucks are just sitting there like, yeah, okay, we have Giannis. We're in shooters and brought back a lot of the same guys, and we're still going to be really good. But there's nothing, you know, there's not really as much of a hook with them as you might perceive with other teams. I didn't even mention Utah and bring in Mike Conley and, you know, Bogdan Bogdanovic. And or I think they brought in Bojan Bogdanovic. Those Bogdanoviches. They brought in the one from Indiana. And then they have Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert. You know, now it's just finally the year that Quinn Snyder's genius shows, and he has all the players and all this stuff. So I think that the Bucks, you can kind of think about it. It's like, oh, yeah, like, they're kind of Spursy, because in the past, like, you look at the Spurs and no person was going into the year going like, oh yeah, the Spurs, they're so exciting. Like, they're just kind of like, oh, they're going to be good and they're going to be there, and we'll see like what they can do when the playoffs come around.
But they have a head coach who is a disciple of Spurs coach Greg Popovich. So it's all very Spursy, like you said.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the comparison I would make, is that, you know, they're good. Everyone agrees they're going to be good. Everyone agrees they're going to be one of the top two teams in the East. And yet, I feel like there's still kind of like a reticence to pick them, because it's like, well, like, we know what they are. They're not super exciting. Like, yes, Giannis is exciting, but like, we've seen this movie before. Like, let's see what happens with something else. And if the Bucks make it, people will go, wow, we should have known the Bucks were going to be really good. We're going to make it to the finals. Like, and, you know, we'll see what stories are being told in June.
We will be telling the stories all the way up through June, hopefully, on this Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast. Any last thoughts before we go, Matt? I'm seeing, by the way, this hashtag Secret Dante referred to Dante DiVincenzo. What is that about?
Oh, that's a Lockdown Bucks thing. Shout out to our Nemesis podcast. Lockdown Bucks. They've talked about how in the past how Dante was kind of kept under wraps and no one ever got to really see what Dante was all about. And that, you know, maybe that there was some type of coordinated effort to keep him like hidden away, so you know, Secret Dante type stuff. So that's been a thing. They coined that last year, and they're running strong with it. So good for them. Let's see if we can coin some things of our own and get them going. We'll have to work on that.
Shout out to our nemeses at Locked On Bucks. That'd be Eric Name, Frank Madden, and the like. Those guys obviously do a great job following the Bucks, talking about the Bucks all year long. We will be back talking more Bucks, possibly as soon as next week, but certainly soon. You'll definitely want to subscribe to this podcast so that every time there is a new episode, it'll show up directly on your phone, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you find your podcast. Matt Velasquez, we look forward to chatting again very soon.
All right, can't wait. Basketball season's back, baby.
Find us on Twitter at JR Radcliffe. That's me, JRRADCLIFFE. Matt_Velasquez is where you can find Matt. Keep up to date with what's going on with the Milwaukee Bucks. Lots of action here. Lots of preseason action in the next couple weeks. Thanks for listening, everybody. We will chat with you again very soon.